Like, yes, song of the week strategy is great in general, but one of the primary things that you want to do is you're trying to find that moment. And that could be after I did this for a year, but it also could be the very first song or the fourth song or the fifth song. You had it on your very first song. What's up, what's up, what's up? I'm Brandman Sean.
And I'm Corey.
And we are back with another episode of No Labels Necessary Podcast. You can catch us anywhere that you stream your podcast here at the intersection of creativity and currency. And you know, when we do this intro, we have a very special guest today. We have an artist who's doing his thing independently at that by the name of Black Sam. What's good, Black Sam?
What's up, man?
What's going on? It's nice to meet you guys officially.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure, man. Look, you have, I think it was like near 900,000 Spotify monthly listeners, right? Some numbers are probably similar over there when you go to the other streaming platforms. Lo and behold, like, you're independent and you're doing well for yourself just from that alone, let alone with everything else that you have going on with your career. And why I want to start there is many artists are just trying to figure out how I want to get to that point. I'm sure you want to grow, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more that you want, but there's so many artists that are like, how can I just live off of music? You're living off of music, right? Mm-hmm. So with that being said, if we can get into the Bleach moment, right? That blowing up, you had a moment that so many artists, I feel like, go through and people in this industry go through. Am I going to go home or am I going to make this work? Right? And you were able to blow up your song with a specific strategy. And I love how you lay it out. So if you could just share that, I think that'd be a beautiful place to start.
Yeah, for sure. First thing I should probably say is when I dropped the song, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, the first steps of it starting to stream well were all completely out of my control. And it wasn't until I saw stuff happening and saw things moving in the right direction that I was like, I got to figure this out right now so I can do this over and over again. So I dropped the song in March of 2020. It was the first single in a series of biweekly releases that I started so that I could figure out whether I was going to keep making music or whether I was going to quit and go home and apply to grad schools and regular jobs. But I don't want to do that because I really wanted to keep making music. But yeah, you know, this was right after the COVID lockdown hit. So lost my job, all that kind of stuff. Like everybody else was really struggling during that time, I think, too. At least people who were employed by like traditional means. So I dropped Bleach. I uploaded it the day before it dropped, which, like, I know now you're supposed to have it uploaded like 3 weeks to a month early. Like, you're supposed to have everything done super ahead of time. You're supposed to have some kind of post-release plan. But I dropped the song about a month later. It started kind of blowing up on Spotify. And that moment was big for me because, one, it gave me the confidence I needed to keep going and to keep releasing music and hope that I would have another song take off like that. But also it showed me that there was a lot that I did not know about pushing a song. Like, it's not just recording it and putting it out. There's just a lot more to it than that.
When it started to blow up on Spotify, though, like, one, you said that you started off doing like a song a week strategy at that time. This is 2020.
Yeah.
Right? And this, you can't write this. This was your very first song in your song a week strategy.
Yeah. This is the first one.
And it basically started blowing up within the first month. And this is what I say to people all the time. Like, yes, song a week strategy is great in general. But one of the primary things that you want to do is you're trying to find that moment. And that could be after I did this for a year, you know, but it also could be the very first song or the fourth song or the fifth song. You had it on your very first song. Now, it started to catch traction. We'll get deeper into some of the other details, obviously, but you said that it started to take off on Spotify, especially not knowing what you know now. At that time, did you ever go back and figure out how it started to catch traction? Was it straight algorithm or was there something happening on another platform that pushed over?
It was, from what I can tell, it was just the algorithm. Back in 2020, it seemed like the primary algorithm that was driving streams for Spotify, at least for independent artists, was Discover Weekly. And I could tell that Well, I could just tell based on the stats that it was on Discover Weekly every week, but it never left. Like I think some songs later on would get on Discover Weekly for like 2 weeks and then they'd be off, or 3 weeks and they'd be off. But Bleach was getting Discover Weekly streams every single week. And I don't know how it got on in the first place. I think it has something to do with the save rate of the song, like how many people saved it versus how many listeners there were, which is one of the better metrics, I guess, for like how sticky a song is, like how much somebody wants to listen to it again. Like they listen to it, they say this is cool, they save it. So that's my best guess. I wasn't really able to figure out exactly, but that's what it was looking like. Just Discover Weekly was pushing it up every week.
Yeah, I love that. Those are some of my favorite metrics, man, because it speaks to the quality of music, right? Artist, we think about is the TikTok right? Did that one hit perfectly? The advertising. There's so many other factors on other platforms that do work and they're beautiful when they work, but it's nothing like this is pure music. People thought the music was dope and it took off because nothing else but the music. And I know how everybody wants that. It's hard to find those moments today, though.
I think things are a little bit different now than they were in 2020. Like, seem things felt a lot more open in 2020, just in comparison to how they feel now and how it is doing things like marketing right now. I don't know what exactly it is, but COVID, I feel like COVID was just the perfect in terms of like listenership, in terms of people like not really having other stuff to do because so many people were at the crib. It was like the perfect storm for music listeners.
So, how many songs specifically in that run? I know that you dropped music consistently for what, 2 years, you said a song a week?
Yeah, about two. It was like two and a half years, almost 3 years of a song every other week.
Every other week.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was the right idea to keep dropping every other week, or could you have changed your strategy up and got something else out of it?
Overall, I think I made the right choice by doing it. And that's not to say that every song I put out was high quality because the quality control I was doing at that point was virtually non-existent. Like I was right, put it out, right, put it out, get ready for release. Cause I'm thinking any of these songs could be Bleach. And I basically had another Bleach in terms of popularity, in terms of streaming, three releases after Bleach, which was Gristle. And I didn't have any other big moments for maybe a couple years, but those two popping gave me the idea that I could just keep doing this. Like I don't have a job. I don't, like what else am I doing with my time besides like I don't know like hooping and lifting. Like I can just be in the studio every single day, making music every single day whenever it calls me or and looking back, there are a lot of songs that I have like removed from DSPs because they just weren't very good, and it wasn't even about how like how many people listen to them. Like I've removed songs with a good amount of streams, but the my creative process then was a lot less refined than it is now, and I ended up putting out a lot of music that I wasn't really proud of in terms of its quality. So I think I needed to do that at the time because I was developing the right work ethic for making music and the right like habits of being in the studio all the time, writing all the time, looking through beats every day. But then when things started progressing more, I realized that I could take my foot off the pedal a little bit and then drop every 3 weeks. And then I could focus more on the non-creative aspects, like, well, still creative, but stuff like shooting music videos, where if you're dropping every 2 weeks, you don't really have time to, like, once 1 week passes, you kind of have to stop promoting the song that you just put out because you got to start introducing people to the song you're about to put out in a week. And things were very cramped in that way. And once I switched to 3 weeks, which was at the suggestion of a friend of mine at Empire, who I eventually signed a distribution deal with for a little bit, he got me in the mindset of every 3 weeks or of every month. And then I think my music started to get a lot better at that point because I had more time to think about what I was making and what I was dropping. It was no longer mindless.
In terms of I'm dropping a song a week and then I can slow down the rate of music that I'm dropping, which point of a milestone do you think is more important? Is it because now I have X amount of people following me, I have a whole bunch of fans, and now I'm going to slow down? Or is it more about I'm developed and I can push a certain amount of quality? Because you talked about dropping a lot also helps you develop.
Yeah, I would say the latter for sure. Because I was hesitant to slow down my release schedule at first until I realized like I've been giving the people who listen to my music new music every other week. Like there are artists who drop once a year. Like their favorite artists maybe drop an album and a couple singles in a year, and that's it. So I don't think anybody's gonna be like mad at me for dropping every 3 weeks or for dropping every month. I haven't gotten a single message saying like, bro, you got to drop more frequently. Because I'm already dropping more frequently than basically everybody else, at least most independent artists. And I don't see it as a competition or anything. I'm just like being objective about it. Like I have historically dropped a lot of music over the last 4 years. And once I felt like I was developing a better ear for production and a better idea of where I wanted to go as an artist and how I wanted to rap on each song, and also what content I wanted to accompany each song, whether it's music videos or just other social media type content, it didn't really make sense to be dropping every 2 weeks because that was just trying to fit too much stuff in a very condensed window. So it was more of a development thing for me. Because I recognized eventually that people wouldn't be like off of me because I'm not dropping every 2 weeks anymore. 3 was fine, a month is fine. I'm like 5 weeks. I haven't dropped in maybe 5 or 6 weeks. Nobody's like banging on my door about it. So I think that's all right.
Let's take a quick commercial break to talk about Spotify Discovery Mode, one of the most powerful tools when it comes to marketing music today, because it puts your music in the algorithm on Spotify to be listened to along with music similar to you without you having to run ads, without you having to do any content at all, which is why a lot of artists tell me they love it. But a lot of artists don't necessarily have access to Spotify Discovery Mode unless you're a Tulos user, because with Tulos, all artists have a fair shot at getting access to Spotify Discovery Mode just by submitting through them, and they pitch all of their artist music to Spotify to be considered for Discovery Mode. So if you don't meet the criteria, if you are in the position where some of the larger artists are, sign up for Tulos distribution at tulos.com. That's T-O-O. Lost.com, because that's just one of many extremely valuable features that Tulos offers to its artists to make their lives easier. And you can try out Tulos for free by using the code NOLABEL, that's NOLABEL, when you sign up. So go to Tulos.com and check out how you can get your music heard everywhere. That personal release schedule being indie is, I mean, that helps as well. It's interesting you say that. Because the way you said what you just said made me think about if I develop my music up to a certain point, that might be great for putting my songwriter, song creation muscle in the hyperbolic chamber. I develop quickly. But at some point, there might be a diminishing return, and I'm only getting incrementally better while I haven't addressed my ability to express that music through content and figure out what does that look like, showing my world who I am, how do I want to connect and build out what I want people to receive from me, you know?
It's important. I've realized more recently how important the non-creative aspects of the music are. Like you can have the best music, but and you can drop it every other week and you'll do well on streaming and stuff, but that doesn't mean people are going to show up to shows. It doesn't mean people are going to engage with you on social media. It doesn't mean that people are going to be invested in your story and the other things you present to them. Like they might just be listening to the music, and that's great. Monthly listeners are great. The numbers that show that people listen to the music, like that's all good stuff. And I think it's data that's worth having, and I think it's something to be proud of for artists who have it. I also believe that there's a difference between somebody who's just listening to the music and somebody who's like a fan, like a real supporter, who's gonna, buy tickets to the show when they're in town or when you're in town, and who's gonna get merch and who's going to be listening to your stuff every single day, because not just because the music is good, but because like they recognize like who you are as an artist, and they respect that and they like that too. And they relate to you in some way, but they can only relate to you really if you're like, if you're giving them that information in some other way. And sometimes it's in the music, but that's what social media is for, right? Like it's for showing the person that you are within the artist, or the person you are alongside the artist. If you're not doing that, then you can still get crazy numbers, and you can still probably sell shows and stuff too, but I think it's a little bit difficult, more difficult to do that with passive listeners versus active ones.
It makes me think about artists that we might define as one-hit wonders, or there's artists that have several hits, right? But they almost get treated or thought as one-hit wonders. I don't want to call anybody out or anything, but I think an example, just for lack of better example, is Jeremih. You know who Jeremih is? All right, so he got hits, like multiple hits. He's not even a one-hit wonder. He has multiple songs that have done very, very well. But he doesn't have as big of like an audience that would show up to tours or something like that, right? And like people act like this is a new phenomenon that it takes more than just music, right, to get people to show up. Like that is not a because of social media thing. His career predated like social media in the way we have it now. And you can blame whoever, maybe his label situation didn't push his career from a like image standpoint to the level of his artistic talents and achievements. But I think the point still is clear through and through that you have to connect. There's two things. You have to break the artist, you have to break the music, and they're always been separate things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of people just have to see that for themselves. Like a lot of artists have to see that actually happen in real time. Like I did. Like around this time last year, I had probably 1.1, 1.2 million monthly listeners. And I'm thinking like I'm selling out every single show. Like in a second. Like I'm gonna post the link on my Instagram and shit gonna be sold out. And that was not the case. Like it wasn't, a dozen people there, but it was far from selling out. And I was a little bit confused at first. I was like, I got all these monthly listeners, but I had to realize that that's not necessarily a fan. Like a monthly listener is not necessarily a fan. Like they might hear something, they're like, oh yeah, that's cool. But there's a difference between that and somebody who like go to your Instagram and go to your Twitter and see what you're on and start interacting with your stories and your posts and be hitting you about shows where, when are you coming to this place? When are you coming to this place? And that kind of interaction, those are the people who are going to pull up to shows. Like it's not necessarily the casual, like somebody who gets me on an algorithm might not even know like they don't know where I'm from. All they know is my name, maybe, and they know the name of the song, maybe. That's what like Shazam is for, right? Like I can see the Shazam stats on Apple Music, so they might not even know that. And it took me that moment of like not immediately ascending to having 500 people packed out of a venue relative to my monthly listener stats to be like, all right, there's more work I got to do than just putting out good music. Like I got to figure this out.
I love hearing that because people will say stuff like that almost as like a shot at any artist or social media influencer, right? It's like, oh, they got this many monthly listeners, but they can't have X amount of people to show, or they have the X amount of followers on social media and they can't bring these people to a show or get or sell a certain amount of merch or whatever it is. But I think that comes from just ignorance of the process, knowing that that's a process, and usually you're going to have one before the other. And as an artist, you're constantly doing this push and pull, right? It's like, all right, I want to grow more, a lot more in this area. And then now, how do I monetize the growth that I've had so far, or even just nurture the relationship and visibility I have? Like, those are different activities. And it takes getting to a certain point where you have a full team and there's a full machine where you can feel like you could do all of them at once, kind of. But until you get there, it's like I'm constantly sacrificing. Okay, I'm getting visibility right now. All right, now I'm kind of like focusing a little bit more on nurturing, and then now I'm focusing on show, or now I got to go back to visibility. It's like this this push and pull, is that something that you felt personally?
Yeah, I mean, I feel it now still too. Like, I think even with a very well-established team, like, I feel like I have that push and pull is still there. I find myself having some stretches where I'm really focused on creating music, but the business stuff, the marketing stuff, it's just not it's not occupying the same space in my brain as when I'm on a writing kick and I'm writing a song a day and I'm in the studio recording every day for a week or 2 weeks. And then there's some stretches where I don't write at all because I'm so preoccupied on how to set up the framework for, releasing an album and what goes into the social media aspect of things. Like, I'll post on my story every day for a week, but I might not write because I'm more focused on interacting with supporters and I'm more focused on getting pre-saves for a song or whatever it is I'm trying to do to build up the fan base. And sometimes I have the mental capacity to do all of those things, but the way I work is usually like one at a time. It'll be like a week on, a week off. So there's, I think as an independent artist who is ultimately making all the decisions for themselves, that constant push and pull is very much constant. You can't really escape it. I guess unless you get to that level where, you're undeniable as an artist. Like, Currency is an undeniable independent artist. I'm sure he's not really cutting his brain into pieces to figure out when he's going to write next and when he's going to, like, what he's going to do for merch. Like, he has the team in place. He's been doing it for 20 years at this point. Like, he's there. And I'm trying to get to a spot like that where I'm undeniable so that I don't have to really think about these things with the same intensity as I do now in order to get to that point.
Right. Square, I know you got some stuff about like some of the music to ask, but before we get there, going back to Bleach, you dropped this song as a part of your Song a Week rollout. It's your very first song, and it blows up 4 weeks into your Song a Week rollout. When you notice that this song is moving, did you do anything different to make sure you were able to take advantage of the moment? Because you're still dropping this other music. You did continue to drop song a week, but like, did you, I don't know, get PR for it or pay some influencers? What happened during that time?
I honestly had no idea what any of that was at the time. Like, I didn't know. I didn't even think that you could connect with an influencer, like an Instagram influencer, and be like, "Hey, could you use this?" Like, I knew it was a concept, but it didn't come to mind until much, much later that I could just put this song in front of somebody and say, like, if you would use it, what did I do? I really just ran ads. That was the main thing, the only thing that I did, real basic Instagram ads. I didn't do too much tinkering with the demographics or any of that stuff. But once I saw Bleach was moving really well, I started running ads on it. I got a really good return. I think I put in $50, $10 a day for 5 days. I wanted to see, or maybe it was $5 a day for 10 days. And I got like 200 followers. And at the time I had 2,000 followers. That was like a big jump. And then I tried the same thing with the next release, which is like no longer even available on DSPs. And then I did it with the next one. And I was like, oh, this must be broken now because I just got 200 followers off of Bleach, but I got like three followers off of this song and I ended up losing money. So the algorithm must be broken, which is pretty indicative of what my mindset was at the time. Like, I don't even think at the time I was like humble enough to understand that, like, the music was just not hitting. Like, it wasn't connecting with people the way Bleach was. And neither was the next release, and neither was the next one. And then I did it on Gristle, and then the Gristle ads ran really well. And then I did it on the next few singles. And I was thinking, like, I'm kind of wasting money on all these songs that aren't popping when I could just be putting all my money into Bleach and Gristle over and over again. Like, these are the two songs that have stream-wise are performing head and shoulders above the rest. So maybe I should just consolidate all my money into those. So that's what I did for like a year. Like a year and a half, I would just funnel money into those ads, and then people would reach out about all kind of stuff, but especially for features. And then I started selling features and started putting that money back into the ads and getting more followers and then more monthly listeners because the songs were doing well on Spotify. And then I was able to justify charging more for features because my numbers were better. And then I would take that money and put it back into the ads. And it was all just a cycle for like, like a year and a half. And that peak spending was probably like $1,000 a month on ads. But I would sell three features and get it back and have a little bit extra to put right back into the cycle again. So that was my strategy. And it wasn't a very refined strategy, but it worked at the time. It doesn't work the same way right now, just based on how the ads, like the Instagram ad algorithm is set up, but it worked really well back then.
So you said 2 years, maybe 2 years, man, running ass. And do you think it's more those songs have also gotten their particular like lifespan in the ad climate where maybe you might have another song that might hit and connect again, but you'll be able to try something out similar?
So after, I mean, I was still on the biweekly release schedule, and then eventually it was 3 weeks, but for the most part, it was 2 weeks. And I had a couple other songs that I started running ads for, and those also did really well. They didn't perform as well on streaming, but one of them, I ran an ad for my song called Swordfish because we shot like a live performance video out on the dock, here in Chicago, and I was wearing like a yellow fisherman suit. And I think sometimes like the visual can do a lot for an ad, because for Bleach and for Gristle, it was just a cover art, like nice covers, but it was just a cover glitch art, so it would like move. But I was running ads for Swordfish, and that was when I got the best return, the best followers per dollar spent ratio I've ever gotten from ads. And I just ran that shit into the ground, basically. Like I was getting 3 followers per dollar spent. That it was ridiculous. I put in probably like $2,000 just because I wanted to see how far it would go.
You're running ads directly to the song, or were you running ads directly to your profile and ads?
Directly to my profile, because I wanted people to come, follow me. I wanted people to reach out about features so I could put the money back into the ads. And that's basically how it just worked for until the ad algorithm changed enough to where I wasn't getting an as efficient a return on the ads. And then I just kind of stopped because I didn't have unlimited money to put in. But it got me from 2,000 followers to maybe around 16, 17,000 followers. And I think the rest has just been people coming across my stuff organically. But more than half of my followers have come from Instagram ads for sure.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, that's crazy, man. But yeah, like Shannon said, man, I wanted to get into some of the music stuff, particularly around this quote I saw you make in an interview you did a couple of years ago. And just to give context to the audience, in the interview, you were talking about why you don't like being compared to or called a conscious rapper. I don't know if you remember making that statement, and you said something along the lines of, just paraphrasing, like there's a lot of artistic choices that the space makes that maybe doesn't align with what's popular now. And the part that stood out to me the most is you said something like, they're not necessarily giving new information, but you think it should be packaged in a way that at least is personal to the people listening to it. And that stuck with me because I do feel like that's an issue that a lot of artists in that lane have, right? Like y'all are, well, not y'all, but the intellectuals, they're smart about certain things, but you're taking these different elements and you're not really making it make sense to like the high school kid that just learned about prison reform movements or something like that, right? So how do you balance, of course, finding a way to even make that type of information palatable, you know what I'm saying, like a general music landscape, with also making sure that you're packaging it in a way that the audience can actually resonate with it and actually want to stick to.
It's really hard. That's those types. Well, if I write something like that, it's typically more of like a Instagram story, just because it's a lot easier to articulate my thoughts without the parameters of a rap song. Like where it, like every you write a song, you can't just You can't just say stuff and like not rhyme and explore every avenue of what you're thinking. You have to fit it into like the cadence, and the rhyme scheme has to be like, it's a song. It's not just speaking your thoughts, and that's difficult to kind of distill the essence of what I'm really thinking into something that's very important into a song that also has to sound good. It's a really difficult balance to strike, I think, because oftentimes it just sounds contrived. Like if I could probably write a song in 20 minutes and say stuff like, the jails are full, and there are drugs in the black community, and people are poor and dying, and gang violence is a thing. That's not difficult to rap about, but it's also stuff that everybody knows already. I shouldn't say everybody, but the people that I'm talking to, they are generally aware of what these things are. And especially if I'm trying to speak truth to like my people, our people, like that's not new information. And the challenge is just like for anything else, like rapping about anything else, is to say it in a way that it hasn't been said before. And I have struggled to do that, which is why I don't release songs like that very often. I've released two songs kind of like that, and the one most recent one is more about, it's called Stumbling Block. I released it a few years ago, and it was a little bit easier for me to write that one because the first half of it was about my personal experience with the police. So it wasn't like a general idea. I was saying like, this is what happened to me. And then it pivoted into like people thinking that posting black squares on Instagram is activism, and that's their work. And that was something that I felt personally, and I had an emotional response to people doing that during the George Floyd the protests after George Floyd's murder. And that song took me forever to write because I was constantly thinking and checking myself and thinking, am I doing this in a different way than anybody else who's rapping about things like police brutality, or am I just saying the same shit? Because do people really need another song like that? Because they can just go listen to anything else. And the reason I stuck with it is because I took a more personal approach to it and talked about my own struggles with police brutality or with police misconduct. But I also sent it to dozens of people before I released it, just to see like, does this sound like I'm just, I guess this wouldn't have applied 2 years ago, but like, does this sound like I'm ChatGPTing a song about police brutality? Or does it sound like this is like really me? And they were like, yeah, this sounds good. Like, it sounds like it's you. You're approaching this in a, paraphrasing, of course, but you're approaching this in a way that doesn't feel like you're just saying stuff to like get internet points or whatever. But that balance is really difficult to strike, and that's why I don't do it very often. And it's not because I don't care about issues, and not because I don't think things are worth talking about. I just think they're much easier to talk about in the form of a story or a post or even just talking like this, because if I'm really trying to like discuss, if I'm really trying to discuss something that has a certain level of like nuance and intricacy contained within it, then a song might not be the right place to do it. And I think it's typically not, honestly. And if it's personal to me, then I'll try it in a song. But if it's, I don't know, detailing the history of how slavery became peonage, and then peonage became like mandatory minimums and like mass incarceration, and then how that turned into like the privatized prison industry, like that, like I don't think there's a way for me to put that in a song without it sounding either corny or too specific for anybody to really digest it as a song. So
No, that makes sense though, man. Because I think that's like you hit the nail on the head with what I think a lot of that space tends to have issues with, right? Is either you're more so broadly speaking on this issue that you possibly do care about, but the audience can kind of feel that there's no personal relationship to the issue necessarily, right? So it starts to feel a little bit like pandering. And I think the other side of it too is that, you know, we often hear, especially with music, like sometimes you gotta put the pill in the peanut butter, or however the saying goes, right? And what I've noticed is that a lot of that community that kind of brands themselves that way, that's the part they don't want to do, right? And I've even heard it outside of music, like even when you think about just like popular orators or people who really are like activists in that way, some of the best ones are the people that have realized like, hey, in order for me to like get this message across, I gotta kind of like step off the soapbox a little bit and come down to like where the people are, or in that way, like the message will never truly resonate. And I know you said you're not, you know, doing a lot of that type of music. But is that something that when you do make those type of songs, or when you are thinking about those type of songs, are you now thinking about what is your personal involvement or story around this issue before necessarily trying to create around it? Or do you let the issue itself necessarily dictate like where the song goes?
I think I think my personal involvement in it is what's going to make the song sound different than anybody else's take on it, and I think that is a prerequisite for making the song, because otherwise, if I don't have a personal involvement in it, or if I'm not personally passionate about the issue itself, then I shouldn't be making the song. Like, I shouldn't be the messenger for this. There are a lot of things to care about in the world, more than anybody has the capacity to, like all the thing to get to all the things all the time. And I think like Black people have enough stuff to worry about within their community, within our community, to be focused on those things exclusively. But also, that's just not really how the world works, because there are a lot of different people and a lot of different groups of people everywhere who are dealing with oppression. And to say that I have a personal investment in things that are happening thousands of miles away, I think sounds kind of funny on the surface, but it's more just an extension of just caring about bad stuff happening to people for a lot of times very similar reasons as to why they happen to us. And I think that is typically the line of logic that my personal involvement follows, like comparing systems of oppression and how the same systems of oppression that have been inflicted upon Black people here are the same ones that are used in other places to deal with other people. And analyzing stuff from that lens has, I think, just given me the motivation to learn more about things that are happening in other places. But I think that if I weren't trying to make that connection, then it wouldn't be worth me trying to write about stuff or rap about stuff. Because then like what am I really doing it for? Like I would have to ask myself that question. And I think at some point in the past, I would have tried to convince myself that I was doing it because, oh, it's the right thing to do. But what am I really doing it for? Because I think if you really dig into that, like if you don't have a personal investment, then you're just kind of doing it to do it. Yeah, I don't think that's the way to do it. And that's just my opinion. Like, I'm not saying that there's not a single person out there who would listen to a song where somebody's like, yeah, like Black people are poor and they're in trouble, and then they're just rapping about other stuff the whole song. Like, maybe that works for somebody, but I just don't think that's how it should be done. As a lyricist, as somebody who really cares about the content of the song, that's not really my goal with it.
Yeah, you can always find somebody for every single audience, right? How many people it'll touch, you know, changes as you think in specificity. I'm just going to really talk about this event just because there's people who are, there's a tribalism or our identity around listening to almost every type of music. I'm just going to listen because I love to listen to that type of music. But for you, it sounds like you really care about the art. You really care about bringing value, right? As a part of the art, right? It's like, if this already exists, what can I provide different in this space, period, right? And how do I work backwards to figure that out? Part of your answer to that equation is I pull from myself and my own experience, because can't copy and paste that. So if I start there, it's going to make it different regardless to some degree. But I love that you think about it in general. From what I see, it's like, if I have something to say, right? and I construct something and I have somebody's ear, I want to make sure I'm offering value, which at the very least has to be some alternative perspective or creative approach, it sounds like.
Otherwise, it's just not, to me, it's just not worth doing. Like, because they can just go get that. They can go get like a regular analysis from somebody else. It exists, especially in the social media age. Like, you can find that anywhere.
Now, I know that you're with Too Lost currently in terms of distribution. What made you choose like a company like Too Lost, and what do you like about them? And shout out to Too Lost, by the way, because they obviously, like, Dame connected us with you.
Yeah, shout out Dame. Shout out Too Lost, man. Dame was real cool. We're supposed to be hooping when I'm in LA next.
Oh man, hey, we had to hoop with Dame's circuit.
It's like a rite of passage at this point, man.
Yeah, yeah. He.
I've known my point person at Too Lost, Jake, for maybe like two, three years, maybe even longer. I think I've been on his radar for a lot longer. And I had a few different distribution situations leading up to Too Lost, like most artists do. You kind of bounce from one to one and you figure out where you fit and you figure out where you feel like you're wanted and you figure out where you're not and you keep moving. And I was coming off a situation with Empire where I felt like I was just kind of treading water, and like my streams are doing well, all that stuff was good, but you know, being signed on the distro side and not the label side, I knew it wasn't a priority, and I was interested in being signed on the label side, just because I wanted to get more of their resources. I wanted to be a bigger piece of the puzzle. And it seemed like there was mutual interest at first to make that transition, but then it ended up there wasn't. So I wanted to move on. And I chose Too Lost because I felt like I was going to be a priority there. And not just because of my relationship with Jake, but because of how it seemed like they were running their company. And after meeting with a few of the higher up people in the company, it just seemed like the right move. And I've definitely felt like a priority since getting there. It's been very different than past situations because I have a point person. I have pretty constant communication, like all the tech in terms of setting up splits and all those things is available to me in the portal. I can do all that stuff myself. And it's just very clean. It's very, a very clean, concise operation, which I appreciate. And it's made it pretty easy for me to do what I need to do as an independent artist. So Jake is, I've been on his radar, like I said, for a while. And we met up in Chicago around, I think, last summer. And he was telling me about Too Lost and how he had just moved over to them and he wanted to see if I was interested. So we sat and talked for a couple of hours about it and it just seemed like the right move. And at that point, I was already kind of on my way out of my last situation, just looking for something that was a little bit more substantive for me, and Too Lost ended up being the one.
Oh, two more questions. Yeah. Number one, what's one piece of advice you would give to Black Sam 2020 version, but knowing what you know now?
I would say just like get used to failing, get used to failure. Don't see it as like a moral failing, but understand that there will be a lot more L's and W's, but the W's are just going to mean a lot more. I'm still pretty far below 500, to be real, over these past 4 years. Like, things are great, but I'm not even close. Like, it's rejections, you know, songs not doing super well, content not coming out the way it's supposed to, whatever it is. Like, there's a lot of that, and it's pretty easy to get bogged down in that. But I would say just get accustomed to things not going the way they're supposed to go, and just treat all those things as learning experiences, and that will keep that would keep 2020 me more centered than I was at the time. Because if every loss feels like you're getting punched in the chest, like you're not gonna have any chest left after like a month. Like if you just get cooked for a month, like that's just kind of it. But if you can see those as just learning experiences, and like things are going to be cool, things are going to even out later, then it's a lot easier to keep moving.
Last question. When you hear the term no labels necessary, what does that mean to you?
It means that the game is different now, and it means that artists have the power and the resources to build teams around them to where they don't need to sign with bigger companies who make them an afterthought in the grand scheme of their operations. They can accomplish a lot of the same streams and touring and playlisting and syncs and all those things they can accomplish at a similar rate, at a similar or a similar success rate as if you were signed to a bigger company, and also not have to worry about answering to anybody else except yourself. So I don't know if I would have believed you or anybody who told me that labels were not necessary 5 years ago, 7 years ago, but I definitely believe that now because that's just what life is for me. And yeah, as many people as I can tell, many independent artists I can tell, like labels are for sure not necessary.
I love it. A label for man. OEL, everybody. I'm Brandman Sean,
and I'm Corey.
This is yet another episode of No Labels Necessary. Beaters.
Appreciate you for watching. If you like content like this, you'll love seeing our music marketing strategies that we use as an agency to actually blow up artists to millions and even billions of streams that are available for free at nolabelsnecessary.com. And the cool part about it that's going to really make you love it is we don't have to be all entertaining and add all this fluff just to get some views that we do on YouTube. We get straight to the information. There's play-by-play and courses that give you a breakdown of every step that you should do to get success. And you have the ability to have communication with us. We get on live talks, a lot of cool things for members, and it's free just to hop in. So check it out right now at nolabelsnecessary.com.